Femme Fatale.
Soon you will know what I want of you, Libra would say to Sagittarius. Soon you will know what I want of you. Immediately an image, terrorizing, of lions' heads arose in advance of the impending revelation. He never pressed her to tell him the things on her mind before she was ready. Never, because he was afraid. He really didn't want to think about it at all. He took advantage of all occasions to repeat to Libra, We must not see each other again. Or, above all, remember, we promised each other that we would never hurt Leo. Then it no longer saddened them that they could no longer hear their footsteps or their voices amid the solitary echoes of the hills, or imprint their shadows on the autumn skies, smooth and serene to the point of exasperation. They loved the silence of their footfalls in the leaves, how the branches did not give way before their passing forms in the forests, and shadowy forms became dear to them, particularly those twilights in which all things seemed to take on the forms of phantoms. It did seem cruel that the ripening clouds of melons and the haylofts were ripening to juicy melon harvest faster than their love. Indeed, their love did not seem to ripen at all, but to have reached its height and remained at that point unbelievably long. Seated above a dry rock wall, Libra tried to eat black grapes. Sagittarius watched the grapes slip away from her teeth, slip down her throat and down onto the ground as if they had never been bitten, swallowed, or digested. Yet this sad and stupid activity, which would have made us repine at any other time, made us grow brighter and more happy with each new grape. How we laughed! And with each new silence rounded afternoon, Sagittarius felt Libra sweeten in unison with the grapes she could not retain. Even Libra's earthly body seemed to appear in the vaguest outline, so that he could almost touch her. It was almost like the outline of a moon. Tomorrow, they both thought. And as he brought her two new clusters of grapes, he thought he saw around her spirit the flesh heaven of a white muscat. Libra was draped in white on the day they had finally set. It was a very light drape that trembled so shudderingly as they drifted up the slope. He grew cold. The wind became too violent as they went up, and he used this as a pretext for turning their walk away from the heights. They drifted down again and went and sat down facing the sea on a slate bench cut into the rocks, which sheltered them from the slightest gust of wind. Each time he stole a furtive glance at Libra to assure himself with delight of the persistence of her presence, he encountered her intense eyes peering at him. He would immediately want to hide. But more and more, at each new contact with her penetrating glance, it seemed to him that the latter, with the miracle of its expressive force, actually pierced through his own body, which from moment to moment was losing its corporeality, as though a veritable window were being hollowed out and cut into the flesh of his body, leaving him more and more in the open, exposing him to the devouring activity of that adored, though mortally anguishing glance. The sensation became more and more acute and reached the point of a hallucinatory illusion. In fact, he suddenly saw a real window transpierce Libra. Yet through this maddening aperture of frantically material and real aspect, he distinguished not her flesh, which he longed to see, but only a grove of lumbered poplars on either side of a long lane. A lane protected by these melancholy, drooping trees, utterly deserted. She had slightly buck teeth, not buck enough to make her ugly or even plain, but when the force of some strong emotion forced her to forget herself for a moment, she opened her mouth, and he was struck by a horrible sight. Before him, there was no longer lovely Libra, but in her place a horse, which happened to slip to the ground at his feet. He barely had time to draw back and press himself against the bookcase to avoid being trampled. At each new convulsion of the horse that was Libra, He was in fear of being crushed by one of her furious hooves. A thick spurt of blood splashed in all directions like a wild jet of water from between her flanks. Libra gave a final quiver and remained motionless, one of her stiffened legs swaying and pointing to the ceiling, in which he began to perceive stars beginning to pierce through. Overwhelmed with confusion, he lowered his eyes. His black clothes, which were spangled with tiny, almost invisible splashes of blood from the dead horse at his feet. Libra was not really dead, of course. She was only putting on a show, and winked, beckoning to him energetically with her hand. All this plunged Sagittarius into such an unbearable perplexity that he suddenly felt it necessary to resolve the situation by an utterly incomprehensible act. What he did was to stoop down to the horse's great mouth and kiss the buck teeth with his soul. Libra's half-open mouth immediately opened a bit wider, and she stuck her tongue into his mouth. After they had kissed a while, she beckoned him to put his head through her window. He wanted to hide his face somewhere, thinking as he did that he could not escape the strong odor of violets with which Libra was soaked. He could feel Libra brush against his clothes, impatient, almost imperious, steely beneath her plaintive look, sinister. Libra's face became the panoramic view of a Russian city, bristling with cupolas, which would change into the bearded and savage face of a Russian Christ, which in turn would be transformed into a fierce battle of furiously famished wolves in the middle of a clearing of virgin forest, which was transformed into the Russian virgin, gazing at her child in the mildest, most dreamy way imaginable. She projected upon his eyes with a maximum of its force of luminous materialization, as if his head had been a motion picture projector, which absorbed and realized all the fairy tales of which her soul was constituted. "Are you going to do it?" she said. "Are you going to do it?" she repeated in a kind of low shriek. Gasping for breath, she whispered into his ear. "Now, tell me what you want to do to me, but tell me slowly, looking me in the eye with the crudest, the most ferociously obscene words, so that I swoon with shame." He redoubled the intensity of his amorous gaze in Libra's direction to keep her rooted to her place. After the blow she had received in the forehead from one of his thoughts, she fell backward and then remained crouching in a posture of waiting. She wanted to live, or did she? Burning to press her hard head between his hands, he opened his eyes wide, the better to see her shame, the better to see her sacrifice herself, consumed with desperation that she had no body with which to burn. And then she said, repeating herself in a more pleading and even more tyrannical way, "Croak me." "What?" She was moving toward him slowly, as if in trance, her fists clenched. "I want you to croak me." Breathless, ready to drink in her revelation, but unable to understand, he opened his eyes wide, the better to miss nothing, to see her shame, the better to see her sacrifice herself, the better to feel himself dying with desire. "Croak me. Are you going to do it? But how are you going to do it?" "No." Her face, when she looked up at him, surprised him with its exulting, horribly vindictive look. "I don't want you to love me. I want you to croak me." Around her waist, he saw the little dagger hanging, as always, in its sheath. He took the handle between his fingers and gazed at it. Then he pulled it violently from its sheath and raised it up to Libra's neck. But instead of a neck, he found that her whole body had become a long, white neck, bent in that sensual way in which the martyrs bend their necks in Italian paintings, with that languid look of half-shut eyes, mouth open. She had hungered for this degradation ceremonial, and he would prove that he was a proper celebrant. Their bodies swayed backward, forward, as he held onto a body which had become one long, long, nerve-taut neck. It occurred to him that she was one vast inner world, greater, deeper, and darker than his, a world which moved with rhythms of its own between the poles of lucidity and madness. What had seemed really terrible, forbidden in his previous life, was not forbidden here. It was a necessity, and they were moving in rhythm to laws as rigorous as those of music. Waves of darkness swept over his eyes, and he fell as if through a dark well to the floor. And then he plunged the knife into her long, throbbing neck, straining to move toward the death which she wished. Oh, no, it didn't work. I'm still conscious. Shall I try again? What's the use? It's impossible. Oh, my God, I can't croak. I can't croak. Have I done this, exalted Sagittarius? The arrow I did not know I shot pierced Libra through the loins. She suffers. May she still be suffering now and forever. May she suffer eternally from that arrow of desire I, Sagittarius, did not desire.